Okay.
We have a work session starting out here. It's a work session for the Telecommunications Commission. They're going to present something.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and introduce the topic, Mr. Chair. So, Axel Swanson, policy staff. I'm here with Jan Bader, staff from the city. The context for this is you'll remember probably this time last year. It's been a while, but both councils, the county council and the city council, still had an interest this time last year in doing something with public access television. And so councils asked us as staff to prepare an RFP and go out and see what kind of a response we would get, what kind of ideas the community could come up with so that potentially we could have a designated public access channel and some success with public access in the community. And so staff did that. I think put together a really good process, and we got back some proposals. And so really the crux of this is we're here today so that the proposal that was evaluated and selected, or I guess chosen or approved as the winning proposal, you could see their presentation, ask them questions, talk to them about it, and get some one-on-one feedback from them. Because there are a couple issues, mainly just one issue, which we'll get into, is funding. Still to be resolved with the proposal, but I think before we get there, this is a good opportunity just to see what the idea and the concept for public access going forward would be as evaluated by your staff and presented today. Maybe we should do some quick introductions. I know most of us know each other, but we don't get to get together all that often, and so just so we're all on the same page before we get started.
Martin Coffey, County Manager.
David Ador, our County Chair.
Jamie Stewart, our County
Council. Jan Bader, City of Vancouver, staff to the Telecommunications Commission.
Dan Wyatt, one component of VCAM and also owner-operator of the Kiggins Theatre.
Hello, everyone. I'm John Barber, faculty member in the Creative Media and Digital Culture Program at Washington State University, Vancouver.
Bob Colletti, I'm currently the chairman of the City County Telecommunications Commission.
I'm Paul Dicker, I'm the vice chair of the City County Telecommunications Commission.
Jim Demon with the City County Cable Television Office.
Peter Sullivan, Horry County Councilor's Office.
Yeah, and so this, just so you know, this proposal was, this was a response to the request for proposals. It was evaluated by staff. It's been presented, and I think there's been a presentation already to the Telecommunications Commission and to the City Council last week. And so their final stop, I guess, is here. And they're going to present the idea to you, and we'll go from there.
Okay, it's over.
Did you want to say anything?
No, Axel covered everything I was going to cover. So.
Vamp for a moment. I have to walk over here and operate the projector. I'm sorry to sit so far apart.
Is that microphone working? We want to make sure you record it.
Hello.
Hold a second.
Hold on.
You might have to adjust the sound over there, or you want to move one of these microphones.
I'm going to just move this little.
Okay.
There's a solution.
I'll put this here.
Okay.
There. There you go.
All right. Well, good.
The man knows how to get it done. Good job. Solution oriented.
I'm sorry if I appear aloof sitting so far away, but the video cable's not long enough to allow me to sit around the campfire there, so I'm here.
Bring that microphone even a little closer to you. We want to hear you loud and clear.
Okay, how's that?
Dramatic.
So as I've already introduced myself, I'm John Barber, faculty member in the Creative Media and Digital Culture Program at Washington State University, Vancouver. With me is Dan Wyatt. He's introduced himself as the owner and general manager of Kiggins Theatre. And we represent a group with a working title of Vancouver Community Access Media. And we're pleased to have the opportunity this afternoon to present our proposal to become the designated provider of community access cable television for Vancouver and Clark County. As we noted in our presentation to the City County Telecommunications Commission, Clark County is inundated by television broadcast signals from stations in Portland, not to mention the many cable channels provided by Comcast, and perhaps many more to be provided by future cable providers. Missing in this massive mix are two elements. First, locally produced, locally focused content, and second, community access to non-commercial television and other media for the creation and the communication of such content. So why is this a problem? Well, I'm sure you all know too well that Clark County grapples daily with a multiplicity of issues. Without the opportunity for citizens to talk among themselves and through civil discourse with their elective representatives share ideas and collaborate toward decisions, our ability to affect our future in positive, proactive ways may be overshadowed by unchecked development, outside corporate interests, or overly ambitious government. Community access television has historically provided a channel for such civic discourse. The community access channel in Clark County, however, is currently lacking a designated provider, and we hope that you will agree with the recommendation from the Telecommunications Commission regarding our proposal to fill this gap. In this time frame that some pundits have called the age of social media, we understand the ease of proclaiming television as being irrelevant, of stating that all action is focused on the multiplicity of social media platforms with their many features and affordances. A dismissal of television, however, seems unwise when we consider that close to 80,000 households in our community subscribe to cable television. With an average of 2.7 people per household, that equals 184,000 potential television viewers. Many of these individuals do not rely on social media for connection, communication, or collaboration with one another. They may not even have the infrastructure or the literacy needed for social media. Television is their link. Without this link, they are deprived of opportunities to communicate and to participate in our community. It is the duty of government to provide these opportunities, so television is hardly irrelevant. And social media, with its rich feature set of affordances, does not automatically make other, more traditional media irrelevant. They remain popular and prominent and part of the action because they provide access to information, communication, and collaboration needed by different people with different interests and different media browsing abilities. They offer depth and breadth not always possible with social media. So the contemporary media landscape is more nuanced and multi-layered than naysayers may realize. For example, our current mix of digital media with their different delivery systems forms the most important and unsettling information revolution since the advent of printing. One upshot is to disrupt our thinking of media as well-defined separate entities. Today's new digital media is not static or compartmentalized. Instead, boundaries, applications, and platforms continually evolve, morph, and redefine themselves, seemingly on a daily basis. As a result, contemporary media are dynamic with multiple centers and margins. Content is more often produced by consumers than by dedicated mediums. Media practices shift and repackage each other in response to changes in art, culture, society, and politics. No single medium provides a comprehensive one-stop information source. Instead, we seek information from multiple sources, accessible in multiple ways. In this context, to impact the future, we need to be skilled at creating, communicating, and consuming digital content using many different media platforms, often working with or in conversation with others. An enlightened community seeking to include its citizens in governance, development, and quality of life decisions will take advantage of this phenomena, power, and potential. So rather than ask, do we really need community access television? The more interesting and more challenging question is, how can we best leverage the features and affordances of 21st century digital communications, including community access television, to help our citizens communicate with each other, to share their stories and their ideas, and through that interaction work collaboratively to build a better community, a brighter future. The answer is not to be found in non-local commercial television channels that see Clark County as a source of consumers, nor is it to be found in any social media that treats conversations on the corner of Main and Evergreen as global marketing. Neither of these solutions are local, neither are focused on Clark County and what we consider important. What does Clark County think important? What would we like to see on a community access television station? One of our volunteers, David Alonzo, asked this question of people in the community, and here are some of their answers. And before I play this short video, I apologize, there's no audio hookup here, so I have my speakers as loud as they can be, so I can do this.
Information about Vancouver, Clark County, it's not really covered, and it's a little frustrating.
Some type of program to show people who are not sure how to prepare vegetables or healthier food or how to grow vegetables?
I don't know. I mean, I guess just keeping up on local stuff.
Everything we see on TV is from Portland and Oregon politics. Washington politics and local politics would be great.
There are car shows going right on up the street. It never gets on the Portland stations unless something bad happens.
Like, you know, I didn't know that there was the basketball thing going on.
The local news is always bad, and so actually the happy stories that happen in the community would be nice.
Science education. I think that's really important. Environmental, climate change.
Possibly Northwest cooking, local foods, local produce, local meats. I think it would be a good spotlight for businesses and up-and-coming chefs.
Children's programming, because there's not a lot of decent children's programming.
I don't know anything that's funny to get people laughing.
Things that are going on in the community. You know, what's going on with school programs in the community.
So no monster truck.
Science fiction.
Ice skating competitions. Spelling bees.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, spelling bees. You don't get that a lot.
Yeah, you really don't. You know, you can't really find them on any other channels.
Yeah, comedy's definitely.
Nothing like Portlandia. I don't like Portlandia. That's like the worst show I've ever seen on television, in my opinion.
Now, these responses are all unscripted. They're honest, and as you can see and hear, overwhelmingly in support of locally based, locally focused community events and issues. As you have seen from our proposal, we offer a vision for locally focused, non-commercial media anchored by community access television while leveraging other media for promotion and community building. Any community-focused media, we believe, should be centrally located, visible, and accessible. The initial headquarters for our proposed community access television station and community media center will be the historic Kiggins Theater in downtown Vancouver, where we envision a small but flexible studio and other resources, all focused on producing and sharing media content of interest to citizens of Vancouver and Clark County. And we're realistic, professional, and focused on our community. So rather than promising everything to everyone at the beginning, we intend to start small, offer what resources and opportunities we can realistically provide so to promote rewarding results. Growth, we believe, will follow. Our vision will be realized through partnerships with community nonprofits, city and county organizations, businesses, schools, clubs, and individuals. Our proposal package, which you have seen, includes sample letters of support from several potential partners throughout the community. Ideally, partners will provide financial and in-kind support, as well as opportunities and resources to build out the overarching vision of a multifaceted community media program where community access is highlighted. The Creative Media and Digital Culture Program at Washington State University has already pledged support as a partner. You know the high-profile success of this academic program in our community. two community reading projects, various media events, community presentations by international digital media artists, outreach and civic engagement with many organizations throughout the community, a digital media art gallery in downtown, the only one of its kind on the West Coast, and more. The director of this program, Dr. Deanie Grugar, has asked that I publicly reiterate her support of the proposal. The Creative Media and Digital Culture Program will expand its already extensive community outreach and civic engagement efforts to include courses, workshops, and other learning opportunities in support of community access television and media literacy in a variety of ways, such as are noted here. Another partnership pledge comes from Washington State University, Vancouver, particularly from Lynn Valentier, Vice Chancellor for Finance and Operations, and Mel Netzhammer, Chancellor. I will say more about the nature of this support in just a moment. All this potential support is good, because like any new business, operational expenses will be a big challenge. So in addition to asking for your approval of our proposal to become the designated provider of community access television for Vancouver and Clark County, we are also asking for your help with operational funding. We believe operational funding is essential for the success of community access cable television. Capital equipment expenses are well addressed by PEG funding, but operational funding is essential to pay rent, keep the lights on, and attract qualified, experienced leadership to our operation. Apparently, the city and the county agree, as the request for proposal for a public access provider clearly notes that you will consider operational funding. We have submitted our proposal in good faith in response to this promise, and in good faith, we certainly intend to become self-sufficient as quickly as possible. But at the outset, operational funding is essential. As a model for this request, we note the previous provision of operational funding by the county for the community access television, previous provider of community access television, in the amount of $50,000 per year. The city will be prompted to follow your lead. Washington State University, Vancouver will match commitments from the city and the county. Support from these three prominent and high visibility partners should provide incentive for other community partners to support our vision for community access media as well. Our proposal then calls for these three principal partners, the City of Vancouver, Clark County, and Washington State University, Vancouver, to each invest up to $50,000 per year for 3 years for operational funding sufficient to support community access media. We will seek similar support from additional partners and move towards self-sufficiency during that same time period. Of course, we would welcome your support beyond this initial 3-year period, and we're happy to talk about options. Now, unusual as it may sound, our request for operational funding is not outside the box. 8 municipalities in Washington, 11 in Oregon, and many others across the country directly support community access or community media centers as a way of engaging their citizens with shared governance. Longview and Cowlitz County and Yakima in Washington, Eugene, Lane County, and McMinnville in Oregon are all good examples. Those operations receive funding from the city and the county to support operations similar to the one we are proposing. They support community access media because democracy relies on public discourse unfiltered by agenda or bottom line. Finally, asking for help with operational funding is asking for help realizing a rewarding future for our citizens, and at not too great an expense. $50,000 is $4,000 a month, and your investment is just one-third of the total investment that we seek. But for your one-third investment, you will receive 100% of the return. We believe such a return is well worth an investment in our community's future. What can you expect in return from your investment? We will leave you with a few examples of locally focused community access television content that we envision in response to community interest already noted. These examples demonstrate what Vancouver community access media can provide, not only with regard to locally produced, locally focused content, but particularly the broadcast quality production and attention to aesthetic details we intend to deliver.
Hello, Vancouver! I'm Temple Lentz, and this is Hello, Vancouver, our live talk show about life here on this side of the river. You guys are looking amazing tonight. Thank you so much for coming out and joining us. It's our 1 year anniversary. We did 6 shows last year.
To becoming the mascot for the Timbers?
It actually just worked out as karmic destiny. I'm from a timber town. I grew up working in the woods and started following the Timbers because of their former mascot,
okay.
Timber Jim.
The Amy Roloff Charity Foundation is all about helping kids. I chose to make it broad and general enough and not to be locked into one specific thing. Mm-hmm. It's about kids facing life challenges.
She is a Latina beauty and pop star. Please welcome Sheena G.
Hi, how are you?
Absolutely great. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for asking.
Diane McCaffrey finishes. Martin gets it off. Right in there. Veteran move for the veteran. Gets that extra boost. Flips it up to Adam Herman. Welcome to Prime Fighting 5 here in beautiful Richfield, Washington.
Nicole DaCosta, welcome to the Discovery Room at the beautiful Hilton. We are in Vancouver, Washington tonight, bringing in the new year with all of our new friendly folks here. Welcome to Couve Couture at the historic Providence Academy here in Vancouver, Washington.
In summary, Vancouver Community Access Media proposes to provide community access television and other media so to promote locally produced, locally focused communication and collaboration throughout our community. By providing such resources, we bring to the table those with contemporary literacy skills as well as those disenfranchised by lack of access. The result? A rising tide that brings new opportunities to our community. We believe we have experience, qualifications, and business acumen to be Clark County's next community television access provider in a manner that will meet and exceed the criteria detailed in the request for proposal issued by the City of Vancouver. Support from the county for operational funding will encourage matching commitments and partnerships from the city, from Washington State University Vancouver, and we hope from other members of our community. We look forward to working with you to implement our vision. We believe the results will be worthy of time, effort, and investment. Thank you all very much for your time and attention. Certainly you'll have questions, comments, I hope not too many opposing viewpoints, but we'll be happy to address them all.
Thank you, Dr. John Barber. Well presented. Compliment.
So, that is all focused on very urban life, very urban living, very urban interests, dense urban like downtown Vancouver. So, how would...
Is your microphone
ready? Yeah, I sure hope so.
Yep.
So, for our portion, I think we're going to be thinking, at least I'll be looking about Robert Clark County. And even the interviews that were down in Esther Short Park, where people are talking about they think what is missing, I think if we went out into the more urban parts of the county, we might find that there, what they think is missing from this sort of regional process that we have here, commercial TV. What they think is missing and what they'd like to see more of might be a little bit different. The people who come into Vancouver and who are fascinated with what's going on in Vancouver, that is a lot of people, and a lot of people come through and go back out to the suburbs or urban areas. But I guess want to know how we would outreach to make sure our programming would be balanced. Now, we do know there's how many people in urban areas, 300,000 maybe. And I'm kind of including some of the smaller cities too, but we know there's a good 200,000 in Vancouver, Clark County, urbanized area. So that's about half. That's maybe about half the representation of what interests them or thrills them or excites them. How would we try to capture some broader interests? Any ideas about that?
Yes, actually. But first of all, thank you. That's an excellent question, and it's a great point. And I apologize for not having that sort of content in the presentation, but time was short between the two. Yes, by far, there's a huge amount of the county that is not necessarily in downtown Vancouver. First of all, Washington State University is a land-grant institution, so it is predicated on the point that it's to reach out to the immediate surrounding where it finds itself located to improve quality of life, to help certainly agriculturally, although that's not necessarily a big part of the Vancouver campus. But through that partnership with Washington State University Vancouver, I'm confident that we can reach more distant portions of the community than might initially be realized from our presentation. Our proposal, also the written proposal, outlines a number of different ways in which we propose to market ourselves and make opportunities and offerings known. The use of newspapers, we'll have certainly a program schedule that will appear on the television channel itself, letting people know what's coming up next. We plan a website that will provide information about programming. And content. We see this, as I've said repeatedly, as a community access television station, which means that the community would have an opportunity to provide content. They could produce this content, they could deliver it to us, and we would include that in our programming. And we've had preliminary conversations about how to do this with automation so that folks, let's say, in the far reaches of the county could dial in our website on the internet, submit their material, we would take that, we would include it in the programming automatically, and it would become part of the content that one would see very soon as part of the broadcast channel. We also have the capability, just among our current volunteers, of mobile production of a video. So we could, in fact, drive to some outlying portion of the county and attend a local tractor show or a livestock auction or a strawberry eating contest or whatever might be happening there and provide coverage of it. And we could do this live. We certainly could do it in a recorded fashion and bring the material back and include it very quickly into the broadcast stream. All of our material for content we're also talking about making available after its first broadcast in some way via our website. So there's an opportunity for time shifting. If someone can't see the actual live show, they could be able to recall that archive material at a later date. Did you want to add anything?
Oh, yeah, you pretty much covered it. I mean, resources are small, especially starting out with not being an actual entity yet. So we took what we had available to us. I myself with the Kiggins, we produce a lot of content. It's mainly for our live experience, but some of it, which made it into the video, and then our other partner, Bobby Pallotta, is out doing a lot of remote type shooting. So that's why that's, but we're open to, you know, any kind of producing partners.
I live in downtown Vancouver.
Sure.
You know, I see that stuff every day too. So,
sure.
And it is exciting and intriguing, but Clark County,
sure. Yeah, we just have to make sure that we're public. We have enough of a public face, hopefully through, you know, broadcasts, that we're open to producing partnerships. And people have, individuals have a show idea, certainly make the spiel, produce it on their own even, and deliver it to us, and we can air it.
When it comes to the role that WSUB would play, I assume that they also have the potential to generate content, and not only just the entertaining content, but also educational content. When it comes to the all, there's so much rich opportunity of so many different programs. I wonder, how does, have you thought through what we saw as examples? We saw a little bit of news, we saw a little bit of, and a lot of entertainment in some sports. Can you elaborate a little bit more about how that content, what kind of a board structure there will be, and what kind of freedom that board will have to welcome diversity?
Where to start? Diversity is certainly very important and would be central to any efforts going forward. As a provider of public access television, we would be obligated to accept and to broadcast all content that anyone would provide to us, except that which is blatantly illegal or otherwise specified as unfit for broadcast by Federal Communication Commission standards. So regardless of quality, regardless of content, regardless of point of view, there would be an opportunity to share that diversity via a public access television channel. This is not new with us. This would just be a continuation of previous practices that have gone on historically before our bid to be the provider. Secondly, yes, WSUV would indeed be a content provider, and conversations with Mel Netzhammer and Lynn Valentier confirm this. There are opportunities for online education, for lecture series to be broadcast, whether they are offered at the university or somewhere else. There are opportunities also for us to get content from the mothership in Pullman that might be more agriculturally or rurally focused in terms of its focus, emphasis, or content. It would be very good for viewers in Clark County. However, this doesn't mean that Washington State University wants to take on a role of dictating what should be the focus of a public access television station that they're associated with or what content it may or may not provide. they are ready to support it and ready to provide content and ready to participate in the production of diverse, rich, breadth and depth of content that would be appropriate and interesting to residents throughout the county.
And the whole idea of freedom of speech has its advantages and disadvantages. Community standards, for instance, if you want to welcome diversity, but you also want to make sure that there are some decency standards in there so that parents will be horrified if their kids stumble across some very inappropriate thing. What do you have in mind there? You lay out, instead of just anything that's legal versus something that would be appropriate for the residents, the typical residents and families of our county?
Well, that's also a good question and a very difficult question to answer, because who's in the position of deciding what those community standards are and how should they be implemented? I share your concerns that as an entity providing content to residents of Vancouver and Clark County, I would not want to be the one who's responsible for offending anyone. So, initial investigation of other community access provider stations has members of the community who are interested in providing content, providing testaments, maybe is not the right word, but a indication of what the content is and whether or not it might be offensive and whether or not it contains difficult language or whether or not it contains content or deals with subjects that other people may find offensive. We haven't gone so far as to develop exactly what our guidelines would be, because we don't know yet whether we're going to be designated as the provider. But that would be mission critical when we are designated, and we would start setting those indications into place as soon as possible. We would rely very much, I believe, on the legal counsel provided by both the city and the council, county council, and we would rely also, surely, on the expertise and background knowledge provided through the City Council Telecommunications Commission.
If there is a requirement that in the legal limits of what is standards can be applied, if there is like anything goes, do you know if there's at least a schedule that would allow certain times of day where you can expect to find some standards and other standards applied at different times of day?
Absolutely. What we've talked about preliminarily is a response to the fact that it may be very difficult initially to fill a 24-hour period, 7 days a week, with constant video content. So we anticipate blocks of programming following the BBC model, where there's a morning program, an afternoon program, an evening program, and an overnight program. The overnight program sounds like a great place for content that may be offensive or off-putting to families and family standards, and a great place to air any difficult content. The rest of the day, we intend to program very strongly and efficiently so that one program seems to flow naturally into another. There's not a jarring shift from, and I don't mean to be derisive about this, but apple harvesting to fashion, for example. We would provide a more graceful transition among different contents. And there would be different times of the day in which one could expect to find particular types of programming, and certainly not during the prime time hours of morning, afternoon, and even the early evening would one expect to find something that may be off the wall and or offensive.
So even if you have a board or a policy group that would look at requests for programming comes out of some of these same funds. And is that a function of the contract with cable providers, or is that a function of how the federal communication laws are set up to enable these fees to be passed through?
Let me do a quick refresh on PEG funds. So the city and the county get two sources of revenue for the cable franchise. One is a franchise fee that we negotiate. That's 5% of the, I think it's, is it the gross revenues? So that goes into both of our general funds. The second source of revenue is the PEG funds. So PEG is public education and government, and that is $1 per residential subscriber per month that goes into a fund that is available at least through our Comcast franchise agreement, only for capital projects. Public access television is tricky. It, you know, essentially, if you're not violating some very high bars set by the Federal Communications the FCC, you pretty much have to play what people provide you. But it will be up to the provider to decide when those programs get played. That's the idea behind public access.
I see. Okay. That was exactly the clarification I was looking for. So it can't all be arbitrary.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
It can't all be arbitrary. I don't think I asked the question very well. So that tells us that we can't just make up whatever criteria we want, because it is a free speech matter. And so then it does become critical, the option of when it goes on.
Sure. So the answer is not what, but when.
That's what the local provider has control over, is when things are aired.
And in the previous public access, the experience that we learned from that was insufficient funding sets your organization up for failure, guaranteed. And the $50,000 per year that the county provided was, we knew that was below the threshold and, for sufficient funding. So if WSUB, if our county come up with our two portions and Vancouver doesn't, you're not a whole lot of, you're kind of halfway, you're in that gray zone. The question is, what happens if Vancouver says, maybe, but no?
Well, the feedback we got from the city council was intriguing concept, and that they are interested in going on to the next step, which was a presentation to the county councilors, and that they directed us to see if we could figure out a way to fund the $50,000 a year that did not involve general fund money. And what the city council didn't know at that point in time, because we were still in negotiations with CenturyLink, is the new CenturyLink franchise, which you'll be getting a workshop on here shortly, they have offered to allow us to use their PEG funds for operating expenses as well as capital expenses. So that is a potential source of revenue for a public access station. Now, obviously, they're not going to be producing $100,000 in PEG fees right out of the box. So it's going to take them a while to build their subscriber base up to that. And then there's all the questions of, does all that PEG fund go to public access? What about the government channel? What about the educational channel? But surprisingly, there is potentially a source of non-general funds for public access television, which we were not anticipating when we got in front of the city council.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that there's a flexibility there. That's really defined in the contract?
It's defined in the franchise agreement. We were quite surprised. What we were trying to negotiate is to have CenturyLink have TV, et cetera, and CBTV on the video channel guide. So when you're flipping through 800 channels, it's helpful if you can go to the guide and see what channel your program's actually on. And instead of agreeing to fund that, which Comcast does fund, they said, how about instead if we let you use PEG funds for operating expenses, and therefore you could cover the channel guide costs yourselves. So we were very pleasantly surprised by that offer, but they didn't put any restrictions on what operating funds related to public education and government we could spend that on. So that'll be an upcoming conversation here about putting some parameters on that.
Okay. that would be very useful because the flexibility of funds is really so much more valuable than something that's just simply doesn't mean. All you do is buy capital equipment. Well, but then you can't afford to operate it. Flexibility provides opportunities.
And just as a reminder, there's a couple other resources available for a new public access provider. First of all, the channel itself, Channel 11. Currently, we are in an agreement with Portland Community Media, where they are broadcasting programming on Channel 11 for the public access providers throughout the metro area. It's the Community Access Network. So you can still see programming on Channel 11. It might be coming from Clackamas County. But there's still programming, so that channel would be available to a new public access provider. We also have reserved $250,000 in PEG capital money for startup equipment for a new public access provider. And then the third thing is we did retrieve equipment from the previous public access provider that was still usable equipment that we're storing that would be available to a new public access provider.
The franchise... They wouldn't have a problem with also providing online streaming service. They don't need a competing when it comes to the content generation, or must it all be via Channel 11?
It's specifically designed for cable. So that's we struggle with that a little bit too. That's kind of a fine line there of streaming it online when it's really designed for cable programming. But depending on what WSUV decided with their funds they're going to contribute to this project, I mean, there's probably a way to work around that.
Is that because of the franchise agreement? The cable company really doesn't want it online instead? Or is it because of the cost of providing online streaming, just simply the cost of that?
I'm going to let Jim answer that one since he's... Since he's been the one that's been on the ground with the cable franchise negotiations.
Typically, it's been the cable operator not wanting PEG funds to go to provide internet programming. CenturyLink has basically said that we could use it for operational or PEG funding, so I would assume that you could use that funding for internet connections, for example.
Okay. So if we
had
CenturyLink and Comcast, in order, Channel 11 is right now provided by Comcast, right?
Correct.
I mean, so Comcast would have to agree to, they'd be involved, this would involve both entities, right? Both providers, both Comcast and CenturyLink, they'd have to agree that online content, no?
Just if you wanted to use the Comcast PEG fee for online content, but CenturyLink has lifted that restriction. So channel, with the public access channel would air on both CenturyLink and Comcast cable systems. CenturyLink has said we can use PEG funds for operational or capital, so there wouldn't be a restriction.
They don't care how that's communicated, it sounds like that, which is, I would think it would be the number of people that don't have cable, which is what there's at least 2 or 3 times that number of households than the 80,000. That I would think that the hybrid would be able to have the flexibility to use online in addition to the cable would be a significant advantage, plus all the flexibility you get from that. So right now, there's a potential for flexibility both in the delivery of the content as well as the funding for operations. With the CenturyLink, it looks like that's an opportunity. Also, opens up a promising environment for Coastal Vancouver to say yes. Did they give you an indication?
They said that they find this proposal very intriguing, and if it wasn't for the $50,000 a year commitment, they probably would have approved it. So they essentially said, see what the county says, and then see if you can figure out a way to fund it that doesn't involve general fund money. And now that we know there is a potential source of revenue for that, it's just if you're supportive of the proposal, it's just trying to figure out the mechanics of how that money might flow and working out all the agreements.
Well, where are we? Jim, you would probably know. Bob,
why don't
you speak
in
the microphone?
Yeah, I'll go to the microphone here. If I make a couple of comments on that. Thank you for allowing me to talk here. Basically, as a commission, obviously, we've been involved with this process for a number of years trying
into
to get...
It's
not up?
That's
on there.
Scratching.
Hello?
Tap it.
Hello. It's on? Okay. Anyway, as you well know, we've been involved in this for quite a few years, trying to resolve what we thought was an issue with public access and a previous provider not providing what we thought was appropriate. And so we've gone through this process, finally, you know, eliminated them and looked for a new one. Funding was our biggest concern when we did all of our studies and all our things, and the commission has agreed, and everything that you see of resolutions coming out from the commission, it states that without sufficient funding, this is not a doable project. We don't believe, and that's, the whole commission is unanimous on this. It's not just my opinion. So we believe funding is crucial. So if you come up with the idea, well, what if somebody doesn't pay? To me, that's a big, serious problem, and I'm not sure I could then recommend they even go through with it if we can't get the funding on the table. What we found in the past is the channels failed when they didn't have operational funding. There's also some question, and I know there's a debate going on right now, but currently, according to FCC regulations, you cannot use these funds for operations. There is a bill right now presented in the Senate for the sixth year in a row to try and change the FCC regulations concerning using this money, this PEG money, for operations. It has not been passed. So regardless what the people say in the franchise agreements, my question is, if we rely on that as the future for funding, I think in the short run, we're fooling ourselves, because it's not going to be there. I think in the future, that could be a source of revenue. Now, the last address I have is on the idea of access. I looked at a lot of other channels out there around the country. Those that survive are supported from money from the franchise fees, not from the PEG fees. So the franchise fees are given to the city and the county, and they go into the general fund. Well, the cities and counties that are supporting it pull money back out of the general fund and earmark it for this community access. So it's something that the money is being paid by the cable company that's available. It's a general fund, and once it gets used for other things, it doesn't come back into the concept. So I think it has to come out of some funding other than relying on these PEG fees, because I truly don't believe they're going to be available, at least not in the short run. And first of all, I don't think we can renegotiate with Comcast, because we just signed a 10-year deal with them on that. So I don't think they're going to be willing to make a change, which they might. And on the idea with CenturyLink, it's going to take several or many years before there's enough funding in there to pay for this. So I think if we get in the debate of, well, we'll pull it out of this PEG money, I think it's a no-win situation right now.
I'm only aware of the $1 per month per user. Where does PEG money, I thought that was just included in the general fund. Is there another source for PEG money?
No, the PEG money, the dollar PEG money, does not go into the general fund. It goes into the PEG fund only and can only be used for capital expenditures. And that's the way it's always been. And it is not a fee being paid. It is, in essence, a tax added onto the cable bill as a separate item, public access and government fee that is paid. It's a pass-through. They pay it to the Comcast and to CenturyLink. They then pay it back to the cities in the form of a PEG fund. It has no impact on that 5% money that is paid for the franchise fee. Totally separate fund.
Okay, so there's really two sources. There's the dollar fund.
And there's the 5% right. And the franchise fee, the city, Clark County and the city of Vancouver have chosen to use that franchise fee and just put it into our general fund. There are some communities who have devoted it to their PEG channels, but a lot of communities just use it as general fund money.
So what are we looking at in the cost for the franchise, or for the revenue for the franchise fee? Right now we've got Comcast, about 80,000 customers per, 80,000 a month, right, for pay fees, right?
Approximately, yeah.
The PEG fee, the city and county combined, is about $840,000 a year.
Right.
For PEG. Franchise fee?
Franchise is like $1.8 million for the city and the county each.
So franchise fees are assumably
closer to four.
The franchisees are based on total revenue, basically, or formula for revenue.
5% of gross revenue.
So since they're bringing that in, and there's been some debate as if a PEG fee is added on, does it add on to the 5% cap that the FCC says that there is, and it does not. They're totally separate funds.
So those two sources of funds from Comcast are tied up. They only can go for, one goes in the general fund. That's in other words, it's undesignated.
Right.
It's
right.
Rated, right?
Right. You can use it for sheriff's deputies and whatever you want to use it for.
But the PEG can only be used for capital expenditures.
And only for the public education and government stations.
Right.
So, Mark, you next, what are we using? I guess right now, we're not funding any.
We put the 1.8 into the general fund, then it goes to fund things that are funded out of general fund. Now, we do take a contribution out for CBTV, am I correct, Dan?
Yep.
How much do we give you guys? For the City County Cable Television Office and for CBTV, I think it's about $300,000 a year split.
So we give CBTV $800,000, which is out of the general fund, but we say it's part of that 1.8 collected per franchise fee. So bottom line is we're keeping about $1 million in franchise fees in the general fund right now for other purposes.
And we've had the $50,000 budgeted in previous years because we had FETV that we paid that money. And so the budget authority is available to the board if you want to commit it to this new venture.
So I assume that just simply the agreement we have to, I expect, so we don't set things up for failure again, you have to be each of the three, mutually conditional upon all three saying yes. I assume that otherwise we're vulnerable to end up with a potential pitfall that we experienced last time.
If I can address that, the only other option is if you found another $50,000 part, which I think is unlikely, quite honestly. So I'm speaking purely from the commission. I mean, I'm 100% behind what these gentlemen have presented. I think it's our best opportunity to go forward with public access, and I do believe they've got the talent, the knowledge, and the managerial experience to make it happen. So I like their plan, and so does the Telecommunications Commission. But my belief is the commission is pretty steadfast on the idea of you need the $150,000 a year to make it work.
Yes.
And I think without one of those pieces, I'm not sure we could support it completely.
So, Jan, if our board today expresses their commitment to this, you will then go back to your council informing them of that support.
And we will try to figure out the funding.
WSU's all in. And so then it would be up to the city council to make a call.
Right, and we'll go back and try to figure out the funding.
So there's indication, I think we talked about the proposal.
And I apologize, I think between Axel and I, you didn't get a copy of the proposal.
No, we didn't. And
that's
so,
my fault.
I'm willing to tentatively say that I'm interested, but I really want to see a copy.
Oh, yeah, we will get you a copy. And we would need to come up with, we need to figure out how this would be legally structured. Would be the three-way agreement between the city, the county, and WSUV? Is it four-way? I mean, there's all sorts of next steps we need to take, which would come back to you for approval. Today we were just essentially, do you still find public access to be a valuable service to the community? And do you want us to continue to explore a partnership that involves this proposal?
The other thing is, we talked about 3 years of funding. Is that the total term is like a three-year agreement, or are we talking about the initial year plus three more so that it would be 4 years? I didn't quite understand.
You want me
that.
To take a crack at it? But so, I mean, I think the point there was to ensure they have at least 3 years of funding to get it off of the ground as they try to find and roll to an alternative mechanism for funding. But if they couldn't find that, we'd probably be in a point where we'd have to reevaluate and renegotiate at the end of year three.
We, if you'll remember, you redesignate these channels every year, so there's plenty of opportunity for, and we always require a report on how things are going, and that comes to the Board of County Councilors and the City Council for approval. So we would probably do an initial, I don't want to speak for the law department, initial three-year agreement because that's what they're proposing, but you still come back every year and have to reauthorize them as the public access provider.
I see.
From what you've communicated so far regarding the Vancouver City Council, I would think it sounds like they're not going to just say yes out of the general fund. It sounds like it's going to be conditional on a CenturyLink franchise agreement. How close are we to having that actually be substantial?
I think we're anticipating having the franchise agreement approved by both entities by the end of this year. I mean, we're finished with the negotiations, and we've already got workshop time scheduled with both you and the city council. So we're definitely moving along with the CenturyLink proposal. And again, part of this is figuring out how quickly are they going to ramp up, you know, when is that money going to start flowing, the estimate of what that could look like. I mean, obviously, it's going to be a while before we're getting $100,000 a year in PEG funds.
So, Jan, any revenue growth by CenturyLink, will that come at the expense of Comcast, or will CenturyLink be focusing on new citizens coming to the county? Do we know?
You know, CenturyLink is hoping that they will, as they say, get people that are maybe off the grid right now to sign up for a different cable provider. But the likelihood is most of their customers will come from current Comcast customers. So it's just going to be switching. So essentially the pot of capital money we're getting from Comcast is going to go down as CenturyLink acquires customers. And then maybe they'll talk some people out of their Dish network into CenturyLink.
I expect it to be a mix of switchover and new. And when that happens, what you're really doing is moving from structure to flexibility when it comes to the funds that can be used for operations. What time frame are you thinking? Suppose if the CenturyLink happens by the end of the year, what are you thinking when it comes to when you'd be ready?
I'll let them speak to that. The RFP requires the organization to be up and functional within 6 months of being designated by the city and the county as the public access provider. So depending on when we do that, and I don't know what time frame these gentlemen are looking at, but we were assuming we would give 6 months to get, they don't have their 501c3 yet, they need a board of directors, there's all these steps they would need to take.
So it sounds like you have everything starts with a vision. You have a vision, you translate that to a business plan, and give us a good overview of that. Confident leadership, we said you already have a representation of confident leadership. Dr. Barber, I know you very well, and all that you accomplish at the school. Respected partners, WSU being a very important partner because of the credibility and the resources along with them, plus all the support that you get from your own students there who want to be able to express their creative creations. And about letting you say the same story. And I'm also thankful for Kiggins, your ability and vision to be able to have your facility centrally located. It sounds like a good fit. The potential for startup capital, PIF funds, all of those agreements, you fill the gap. The necessary funding is really critical to this. And that's really thankful you've already been able to say with confidence, it sounds like, that WSUV will match what each of us do. And if we step forward with it, then the weak link may be Vancouver City. So if that would be very encouraging, almost miraculous for them to break that money loose to be able to do that. But that would be a community vision to do so. So at this point today, it sounds like we can express our interest and our encouragement. We can't at this point make a commitment, but we can encourage you and say, let's dig deeper, let's pursue, and let's find out what the next steps are. And it may you'll have to come back to a more formal opportunity for us to be able to vote on it once this solidifies.
Yeah, there will be contracts that you need to approve, and you'll have to officially designate them as the public access channel. So there'll be a number of touch points back in front of you before this is in effect.
If I might, we have before you resolution 2015-04. They don't have it yet?
We didn't
give it to them. Okay, the city got it.
Yes, I know. We had a little miscommunication about...
Okay. Well, we have that, and it outlines exactly what we talk about as a commission for the funding requirement as part of it and so forth, and the redesignation based on those particular criteria. So it's all in the resolution.
I'll go back and make sure you get that right away.
Sorry.
So to add to that, I just want to say it's a very interesting proposal and very well thought through. And it's encouraging because we can see several years ago the other system was not working at an optimum basis and even had some issues. And there was great concern about that. And so a change now and a clean start, you know, to start anew with this, something that can be really good for our community and to reach out to people in our community that are something other than a consumer to spend money. As you showed the commercial TV there, but it's about reaching out to consumers. And so this idea that we can reach out to our folks in Vancouver, Clark County, Battleground, Ridgefield, Yackel, and wherever, I think that's a really encouraging, positive concept.
And provide content that's relevant to Clark County residents.
Sure, absolutely.
There is currently no provider for locally produced, locally focused content other than newspapers in the county. So I appreciate very much that you see the vision behind the proposal that we're making, and thank you for your comments and your tentative support. I appreciate that as well.
Any last comments?
No, other than there is locally produced content on CBTV and TV, etc. Just it's very specific to education and government.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
No public.
The comment that the commission looked at seriously was the idea CBTV, all content is controlled by CBTV and the city and county government. So it's really not a forum for people to talk back or express their form. And the same thing with the educational channels. You can't say, hey, I want to give my opinion. That's what you can do with community media. It gives a chance for the citizens to talk back. We're talking to them, now they want to be able to talk back. And in communities it works really well. It's very positive.
It would be helpful if you were to point us in the direction of the examples. I know there's, you listed that there's about 11 in Oregon and something like that in Washington. You pick the first, the top two or three and say, here's a really good example of what we can envision. This might look like we're going better, right? So if you could send us a list.
We can always be better.
I assume that there's something that you can view some of their content online so we can do it from here.
Are any of those in Oregon, to your knowledge, facilitated or assisted in any way through colleges?
I'm not aware of any that have a direct link to a university such as we're proposing, and I that's one of the things, if I may say so, that I really like about our proposal, is that there is an opportunity for students enrolled in classes within the program to be content producers as well as consumers, and in between they can critique and think about that sort of content. So we have an opportunity to produce better citizens for the county, I think, at least in terms of their ability to deal with complex issues through a number of different electronic and digital media. So we'll have classes, we'll have work-study opportunities for students, internship, directed study opportunities for them to be directly involved in the operation of the programming and the station as we envision it, all of which I think will play out to the benefit of the county.
We will get back to you with the next steps.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
There you go, Mark.
Excuse me.